This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Those are deviants, and they were dealt with properly. And we are very happy that they failed, and they will never succeed again.
That's Christopher Mutsavangwa, spokesman for Zimbabwe's ruling ZANU-PF party, on detained activists at last weekend's SADC summit. Details coming up. Also, U.S. President Joe Biden, who is not seeking re-election, addressed the Democratic National Convention last night. And the search continues for students kidnapped in Nigeria. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. First, our top story. A month after announcing that he will not seek re-election, President Joe Biden addressed the Democratic National Convention Monday evening. He sought to burnish his legacy and pass the torch to Vice President Kamala Harris as the party's new presidential nominee. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wida-Kuswara reports from the DNC in Chicago, Illinois.
Introduced by his daughter Ashley, President Joe Biden received a hero's welcome. At the Democratic National Convention in Chicago, Illinois, he fulfilled his promise to be a transitional leader.
Are you ready to elect Kamala Harris and Tim Walz?
And gave his full support to Kamala Harris, the party's new presidential nominee for the November election.
She'll be a president respected by world leaders because she already is. She'll be a president we can all be proud of. And she will be an historic president who puts her stamp on America's future.
Biden was unchallenged at the Democratic primaries. Just a month ago, the roughly 4,000 delegates here were set to nominate him. But Monday, he balanced support for Harris and his achievements in office.
COVID no longer controls our lives. We've gone from economic crisis to the strongest economy in the entire world. Record 16 million new jobs. Record small business growth. Record high stock market, record high 401ks, wages up, inflation down, way down, and continuing to go down.
It started with a debate against Republican nominee former President Trump in late June. Biden, who is 81, had such dismal performance that people questioned his mental acuity. Then an assassination attempt on Trump that rallied Republicans and pushed him further ahead in the polls. For weeks, Biden insisted he would remain in the race, even as party leaders privately asked him to step aside. Thomas Schwartz, presidential historian at Vanderbilt University via Skype.
Joe Biden is a one-term president who was forced off the ticket by the leaders of the Democratic Party, despite having won the nomination in the primaries. He's now asked to make an enthusiastic endorsement of his vice president, Kamala Harris. It doesn't take a Sigmund Freud to realize that he might be very conflicted about this.
If he's conflicted, Biden did not show it, displaying strong support for Harris, basking in the love and gratitude from his party. We spoke to some delegates here on the floor.
It was a beautiful speech. It was a great speech of a culmination of years and years of service.
Well, I think his legacy is strong and positive. And tonight he told the American public why he loves them and what he did for 50 years to serve our nation. And it's an incredible record.
This despite Trump trying to sow division among Democrats.
They forced him out. It was a coup. We had a coup. That was the first coup in the history of our country.
Biden repeated Democrats' theme of Harris, a former prosecutor, going against Trump, who has been found guilty in court.
And crime will keep coming down when we put a prosecutor in the Oval Office instead of a convicted felon.
Biden ended his speech with an embrace from Harris, cementing his role among Democrats as the leader who could possibly save the country again from Trump, this time by passing the torch.
Joe, thank you for your historic leadership, for your lifetime of service to our nation, and for all you will continue to do. We are forever grateful to you.
Patsy Wida-Kuswara, VOA News, Chicago.
As we just heard, President Joe Biden addressing the Democratic National Convention Monday evening paved the way to Vice President Kamala Harris as the party's new presidential nominee. VOA's Carol Van Dam, who is monitoring situations at the convention in Chicago, talked to me about the president's speech as well.
Yes, President Biden, for several moments, couldn't even speak. He was just caught up with emotion. At first, he was, you know, starting to dab his eyes a bit, looking as though he was going to tear up, and clear that it was because there was so many sustained cheers for him when he got up on stage. He said thank you nearly a dozen times, trying to, you know, quiet down the delegates, and a lot of "We love Joe" signs in the audience. His wife, First Lady Jill Biden, kept on crying during his speech, and his daughter Ashley was there too, dabbing her eyes at points. And his son Hunter was behind stage; you couldn't see him, but it was clear that the crowd was completely, you know, excited to be in his presence, electrified, eager to, you know, hear what he had to say, and, you know, got up on their feet several times. And he was very emotional, like I said, but he wanted to talk about, you know, how it was important for him. And he even said that it was one of his first decisions of his White House career to appoint Kamala Harris, or ask her to be his vice president. And of course, she accepted. And today she will be, or this week, she will be officially the nominee of the Democratic Party.
So basically, it was Joe Biden passing the torch to Vice President Kamala Harris as the party's new presidential nominee.
Definitely, definitely. It was that. And he made it clear that it was his decision, not anyone else's. And he spoke to the crowd like comparing the Democrats to decades ago, but with a recognition that Kamala Harris is the person that is going to move the party forward into the future.
Who are the Democratic heavyweights scheduled to talk this evening?
So the remaining days of the Democratic National Convention will feature a number of speakers who were considered to be Vice President Harris's running mate, which was the obvious decision to elevate the next generation of Democratic leaders. Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro, Senator Mark Kelly of Arizona, Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg, and Maryland Governor Wes Moore, Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker. They'll also be delivering primetime speeches during these remaining 3 days of the convention. We're also going to hear from former Presidents Bill Clinton and Barack Obama.
And lastly, Carol, there have been reports of dozens of protests breaking out throughout the security fence near the site of the Democratic National Convention. Is there anything you can talk to us about that?
First, I wanted to mention to you that there were thousands of people that marched just a few blocks away that presented kind of a thorny obstacle to the whole scene of unity inside the convention center. But they were not as big as a lot of the organizers had expected. They were talking about tens of thousands, and there were not tens of thousands. But there was a coalition of about 200 groups of people there that were not only talking about the Israel-Gaza war and, you know, by far mostly pro-Palestinian protesters, but there were also LGBTQ people there, abortion rights people there. There was a whole number of people there. And, you know, basically saying, some of the protesters said it's just not good enough to stand up against Donald Trump, the Republican nominee. You know, you have to do more, and you have to stop arming Israel in this Israel-Hamas war.
VOA's Carol Van Dam reporting from the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. Arab Americans are among the thousands of activists gathering in Chicago during the Democratic National Convention to demand an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. According to the Arab American Institute's poll, after 10 months of Israel's war in Gaza, 88% of Arab Americans say they have a negative view of the way the Biden administration has handled the war, while 55% of Arab Americans have an unfavorable view of Donald Trump. Khalid Jashan, president of the Arab Center in Washington, discussed with VOA senior analyst Mohammed Al-Shanawi whether this trend could change as Kamala Harris becomes the Democratic candidate.
I don't think so. Essentially, the numbers, first of all, are not surprising, but the 88% of Arab Americans reflect basically the attitude with regards to recent events. The fact that for the past 10 plus months, the administration has been engaged in supporting an Israeli policy against Palestinians in Gaza. So therefore, it has been elevated within Arab American circles to the number one issue in foreign policy. So people are animated by it and they react forcefully. The numbers were much lower at the beginning of the conflict, and it kept growing. So to see it at 88% today is not surprising. Now, the number against Trump, this is 55% who are apprehensive or feel unfavorable toward Trump based on his own performance as president. These are the people in the community who remember his policy on Jerusalem, remember his policy on moving the U.S. embassy, remember his stand on the Golan Heights and on the Abraham Accord. So this is related to the past when he was president. That shows that the community is much more involved in foreign policy today. Now, should Kamala Harris win, I don't think this criticism of the administration is automatically transferred to her. I would say that depends on how she conducts her foreign policy on Arab-Israeli matters in general and on the Gaza war in her emerging position. As a candidate right now, you could see that there is a new position emerging from her side. If that position emerges into something, let's say, more independent and more rational and less hostage to domestic politics, particularly to the U.S.-Israeli relationship, I would say that the numbers would not necessarily transfer to her as a Democratic presidential candidate.
The Democratic National Convention would ratify the draft platform of the Democratic Party. Comparing this platform to the Republican one, which one is more appealing to the Arab American voters?
In general, I would say the Democratic Party's platform is definitely much more sensitive and much more reflective of the general sentiment of the Arab American community. That is related to the fact that the party is much more open to immigrants, and therefore their positions, as reflected in the platform, tend to be reflective of the Democratic street, if you will, around the country, including Arab American Democrats. The Republican platform has an appeal, of course, to mostly, I would say, the higher economic strata within the Arab American community, to the business community, because their concern is not foreign policy in the Middle East. Their concern is the economy. Their concern is paying less taxes. Their concern is more trade and more money. So that element in the community, which is not insignificant among Arab Americans and Muslim Americans, is still find the Republican platform appealing to them. But as far as foreign policy Middle East-wise, I would say the Democratic draft platform is much more appealing to a wider cross-section of Arab America.
Thousands of activists are gathering in Chicago during the Democratic National Convention to demand an immediate ceasefire in Gaza, as well as highlight issues like abortion rights and economic injustice. How would that impact the Harris campaign?
I think basically that translates into pressure on the campaign to be much more reflective of these demands from the grassroots, especially as a campaign from a candidate who is trying to prove herself to be more open and more representative as she charts her own course now as a candidate, if you will, not just as a vice president of a previous administration.
That was Khalil Jashan, president of the Arab Center in Washington, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohammed Al-Shanawi. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. And for more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. Human rights organizations are reacting angrily after Zimbabwe's ruling party acknowledged that more than 100 activists were recently detained to keep them from protesting during a Southern Africa Development Community Summit held over the weekend. Authorities say they will only now start to release those who were detained. Columbus Mavunga has more on this story from Harare.
Speaking with journalists in Harare, ruling ZANU-PF spokesman Christopher Mchangwa defended the decision to detain the activists to prevent them from protesting at Saturday's Southern African Development Community Summit in Zimbabwe.
Those are deviants and they were dealt with properly. And we are very happy that they failed and they will never succeed again. This was their last oomph at misbehavior. They will never get another chance again because now they know what happens when they try to behave in a certain manner. And I'm sure there will be a good reason to free them up soon afterwards because there's no show to disturb. What they wanted to escape is over. So there's absolutely no reason to keep them in, at the status expense in jail after failing. We reward their failure by giving them their freedom.
Roslyn Hanzi, director of Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights, which is representing the activists, tells VOA that their detention is not a laughing matter.
Every person in Zimbabwe should be worried where the ruling party openly admits that it fully controls one of the key arms of government that is supposed to provide checks and balances and in fact to protect the citizens from excesses of the other two arms of government, the legislature and also the executive. The judiciary has a very key and central role in protecting citizens and ensuring that their rights are realized. And in this case, you see them admitting that there is those people that wanted to protest. And of course, protest is not criminal and it's not a privilege. You should not be negotiating or begging for it.
Zimbabwe's Judicial Service Commission refused to comment Tuesday when contacted by VOA. Mary Lola, a UN Special Rapporteur on Human Rights, called for the immediate release of the activists, alleging that some had been tortured during their arrest by Zimbabwean authorities. State prosecutors and the Zimbabwe Human Rights Commission say they're investigating the allegations.
Shown by ZANU-PF spokesperson, who laughed and joked about such a serious matter at his press conference, is telling. The president, Mr. Mnangagwa, has shown how little he believes in the rule of law and how little he believes in SADC's commitment to human rights as chairman. He wants to pretend that everything in Zimbabwe is rosy and fine, but it is not fine. These charges were a travesty. This is the kind of reputational damage Zimbabwe could do without.
Since taking over in 2017, President Emmerson Mnangagwa has maintained that he is a constitutionalist and respects the rule of law. But rights lawyer and legislator Daniel Molokele says the law is being selectively applied against democracy activists. Molokele is with the country's main opposition party, the Citizens Coalition for Change, whose members were arrested ahead of the SADC meeting.
I think what the ZANU-PF spokesperson said clearly confirms what we have always said is happening in Zimbabwe. There is too much political interference in the judicial system. There is no rule of law in Zimbabwe. We do not have a proper judicial system because it's clear that ZANU-PF is abusing our court system for its political benefit.
Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights says it hopes the detained activists will be released soon now that the SADC summit is over. The group says that after hearing from activists, they will decide what steps to take next. Columbus Mavunga, VOA News, Harare.
Police in Nigeria are searching for 20 medical students who were kidnapped by gunmen Thursday. The students were on their way to a medical convention when their motorcade was intercepted in central Benue State. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
The Benue State Police Command Monday told VOA it has launched an investigation into the abduction of the medical students and deployed tactical teams on a rescue mission. But they said the teams have not reported any success. 20 medical students from universities of Jos and Maiduguri and a medical doctor traveling with them were taken in Benue State on their way to a conference in Eastern Enugu State. Anene Sewese Catherine, the Benue State Police Public Relations Officer, spoke to VOA via phone.
The team has moved, but I've not heard from them. Investigation of kidnap is classified. We don't give details out until they're successful. There's no update for now.
The abduction sparked widespread condemnation over insecurity in Africa's most populous nation, where authorities have struggled for several years to control violence from armed gangs locally referred to as bandits. Over the weekend, the National Police ordered the deployment of helicopters, drones, and specialized tactical teams to aid in the search for the medical students. The Nigerian Medical Students Association, NIMSA, says the abductors, using the students' phones, issued a demand of about $31,400 to release the entire group. The association has been urging authorities to secure the release of the students unharmed. NIMSA's national president, Moses Onwubuya, says students are threatening to protest if their colleagues are not released soon.
The only response we've been getting is just we should just calm down, that security and agencies are just on the matter. Calls have been going out through the phone numbers, calling our abducted colleagues. Students are agitating. I mean, we're only just trying to see if we can abide by the security guidelines, but I can't guarantee what will happen any moment from now.
According to Center for Democracy and Development West Africa, Nigeria recorded more than 4,000 abductions in 2023, accounting for 58% of the total cases in West Africa and the highest in 5 years. Security analysts say a severe economic crisis in Nigeria is pushing more people toward crime and kidnapping for ransom. Nigerian authorities have pledged to address economic problems along with security challenges. Meanwhile, families of victims are hoping their loved ones return to them safely. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Police officials say a man accused of killing 42 dismembered women in Kenya's capital has escaped from custody. The Associated Press reports that Collins Jumis Kalusha, 33, was being detained at a police station after the court allowed detectives 7 more days to investigate his alleged crimes before charging him. Mohamed Amin, the head of the Directorate of Criminal Investigations, told the Associated Press it was unfortunate that Kalusha escaped with 12 other inmates after they cut through a wire mesh and scaled the perimeter wall of the prison.
VOA Africa has a wide variety of programs for you. News, lifestyle, health, politics, youth, women, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, television, and the internet on voaafrica.com.
Morocco's justice ministry says the King of Morocco has pardoned 4,831 farmers convicted, prosecuted, or wanted for illegally growing cannabis. The French news agency AFP says the announcement was made ahead of a national holiday today. Morocco is the world's leading cannabis producer, according to the United Nations. It adopted a law in 2021 on the production and medical use of the drug, authorizing its cultivation in rural provinces. According to the Justice Ministry, the pardon aims to allow those involved to integrate into the new strategy. And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Kayla Williams, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.